This is Colorado Edition from KUNC. On today's show, rock climbing used to be a purist outdoor endeavor, but it's changed a lot over the past few decades. And next year, the sport will make its debut in the 2020 Olympics.
It's a really exciting prospect. I've always been a really big fan of the Olympics, and so like the idea of being there is crazy to me.
We'll hear more about that and learn about a new fantasy climbing league.
Plus, a look at recent political strife in the small community of Nederland.
That's coming up.
It's Thursday, December 5th. You're listening to KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Henry Zimmerman. We learned earlier this week that the Greeley Tribune would be letting go of two sports reporters in a move to switch up their sports coverage. The paper's publisher, Bryce Jacobson, wrote in an op-ed Wednesday afternoon that the changes are based on data from things like reader surveys. Nevertheless, there's been pushback from the community about the future of local sports coverage. Now, this isn't the end of the sports section at the Tribune, according to Jacobson, who spoke to KUNC yesterday.
Instead of having two full-time reporters, we will have one data journalist, and then the rest of the team will cover student athletes doing the things that they love in combination with her.
Joining us to talk about this decision and what impact it might have is Corey Hutchins, a journalism instructor at Colorado College. He also writes about Colorado media, including KUNC, for the Columbia Journalism Review. Corey, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the business side of this, right? Newspapers are a business. The Greeley Tribune, in this case, is making a business decision. Is sports no longer the cash cow when it comes to local newspapers?
That's a really good question, and it's something that I think we might find an answer to in what happens with the Greeley Tribune, right? What's happening at the Greeley Tribune is, in a way, what's happening to a lot of local newspapers around the country right now, in that the traditional business model for them just is not working. Subscribers are getting older and dwindling as advertising becomes harder to sell and the internet and tech companies compete for both eyeballs and dollars. That means local print newspapers are becoming smaller and they're, like the Greeley Tribune, printing less frequently. They have fewer reporters to report the news, and they have to really fight and scrap to try and find new ideas and new innovations that work to try and stop the bleeding. Interesting that we're talking about sports, because just a couple weeks ago, I reported how the Denver Post, which from what I understand did not really have a dedicated reporter there covering prep sports, high school sports, they're now kind of outsourcing that to a tech company that uses automation, robots essentially, to report on prep sports. So in one sense, you have a newspaper that says we really need this sports coverage because perhaps it will drive subscriptions rates. It might be because people like to see the names of their kids or their grandchildren in the newspaper, and they clip it out and they put it on the refrigerator and you get it in the print edition. So they want to do it, but they don't want to have a reporter do it, so they'll have a robot do it. Well, what happens in a place like Greeley when you decide to cut down on the sports? Now, the publisher, from what I understand, says that it, you know, they're not just completely giving up on sports coverage. They're going to try and attack this in a different and innovative way. It'll be really interesting to see whether that plays out, and we'll be able to look at this in a case study in the near future, I think.
You kind of briefly alluded to it, but in this op-ed published Wednesday afternoon, the paper's publisher, Bryce Jacobson, wrote that a new data reporter would be taking over sports coverage in a way that kind of involves collecting and aggregating scores and other information. Data is on the top of mind for a lot of people these days. Can you tell us a little more about this trend that is data journalism?
Data journalism is a different kind of visual kind of style of journalism where it's maybe, you know, it's going to be more visual focused, a lot more numbers than the human interest stories, than the longer features. And it's going to, that sounds to me like this coverage is going to be more of just kind of round up. Here's what happened. Here are the numbers. Then it is going to be about the personalities of the folks involved, really contextual stories about teams, about, you know, individual games and stuff like that. So, like I said, it will be an interesting case study to see whether this kind of thing is what readers want or not. And I think maybe perhaps you can look to what the community's initial reaction is about this and judge their future reaction to it and see which one wins out.
Corey Hutchins is a journalism instructor at Colorado College. As for the Greeley Tribune, their new data reporter starts later this month. Publisher Bryce Johnson says the decision is rooted in readership data and that the Tribune's overall sports coverage has been tapering off over the years. That said, there's still some things they're going to have to figure out in order to remain viable.
We disseminate news and information on 11 different platforms. The challenge we've got to figure out is how to monetize that. How do we keep the business going to do the good work? I don't have that answer today. And I don't know that anybody does have that answer today.
Let's take a look at today's headlines.
New data from a healthcare nonprofit shows many Coloradans are visiting hospital emergency rooms for mental health services. In 2018, mental illness was the primary diagnosis for nearly 17,000 visitors, a quarter of which were children. The most frequent visits were for anxiety, panic, and major depressive disorders. The Center for Improving Value in Healthcare says the report reflects a lack of access to comprehensive mental health care services in the state. In Greeley and Fort Collins, more than 2,000 mental health emergency room visits were reported in 2018.
A new study shows that invasive animals are a major problem throughout the National Park Service. After hearing back from 81% of parks, the report concluded there are more than 300 invasive animal species across the country, with only 11% under control. In the Mountain West region, the top invaders are the European starling, rainbow trout, and the Eurasian collared dove.
After a week of being shut down for repairs, Steamboat's new gondola has reopened. The $15 million gondola broke down a day after it opened, stranding several employees, though no one was injured. The Steamboat pilot in Today reports repairs have been made to the main gearbox, the part of the gondola that failed. Crews have also taken steps to improve the design flaw that was causing a constant vibration.
Southwest of Boulder, the small mountain town of Nederland can appear quaint and idyllic. But as small as it is, with the population around 1,500, the community has faced its share of political conflict in recent months, from a recall campaign to the sudden resignation of a town trustee. Charlie Brennan has been covering Nederland for the Boulder Daily Camera and recently reported on how the town is grappling with these issues. Charlie, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Happy to be with you.
So Nederland has been going through a lot of political strife as of late, and that's been leading to a lot of tension in the town. Can you quickly recap for us what's been happening there politically?
Well, sure. Nederland has been dealing with a confluence of issues, and probably some of these, well, certainly some of these go back probably even a year or two. They've been wrestling with issues such as establishing new regulations around short-term rentals, which is a hot topic there, as a lot of people have second homes or vacation homes up there. They are looking at revamping or at least revising their intergovernmental agreement with Boulder County as it pertains to future annexations. And those right there are two rather big issues for them. And then there's even, I think we're all familiar with how a small town can, in a small town, sometimes a small issue can become magnified. And for example, Nederland took, I believe, about $15,000 in a grant from Boulder County to build a greenhouse on a city ball field in the middle of town. And that did not work out for a number of reasons. And they ended up abandoning the greenhouse and having to return the unspent money back to the county, which left, I think, some people with some egg on their faces. And many people in Nederland would even point to that as something that they found very, very troubling and perhaps symptomatic of maybe greater dysfunction.
The community's problems aren't all political in nature. You recently wrote about the closure of a local establishment that was really popular. Tell us about the Pioneer Inn.
The Pioneer Inn, as the town marshal up there had noted to me, is one thing that if people beyond Nederland know nothing else about Nederland, they might very well know about the Pioneer Inn, which is a very kind of rustic, sawdust on the floor, figuratively, if not literally, tavern right there in the middle of town. And it had been there for many decades. And as I noted in my story, back when the Caribou Ranch recording studio was still up and running, people including the likes of John Lennon, Michael Jackson, et cetera, had reportedly come through there to dampen their vocal cords. I think the personality of the inn was seen largely as a reflection of the town, a place where people could be real comfortable and let their hair down, and really an iconic institution for the town. And that closed last month after the woman who's owned it for a number of years ran into a problem with tax being in arrears on taxes. And she is now attempting to sell the inn.
You've been talking to residents all over town. What are they saying about all this?
The story that I wrote caused some degree of controversy in Nederland in some quarters for, I think, failing, some people suggested, to note all the good things. And there are many good things about Nederland that are still clicking along just fine. There is the Wild Bear Nature Center, which recently expanded its operations to include a nice facility out by Mud Lake, sort of an educational, recreational opportunity for young people. There are things like that still happening. I made an intention with that story that I was not going to talk to officials, because I talk to officials a lot. I was not going to talk to politicians either, because I talk to them a lot. I talked to some regular folks, and among the regular folks, there was a lot of concern and a lot of dissatisfaction at the level of acrimony that is currently right there on the surface and also appears to run pretty deep in the community right now.
We kind of saw that with this recall campaign that targeted not one town lawmaker, but three.
Right. And that's a very interesting situation. The there are seven trustees there, and four of them are currently there by election, and three of them, now two with the resignation of one, had been appointees. It is three of the four who were actually elected to their seats who are targeted by this recall. And an interesting thing to me about the recall is the primary driver of the recall is somebody who actually lives outside of the town. She has a business in the town, but she herself doesn't live in the town. And that's actually, it's a very common thing I've found in Nederland and perhaps other communities like it, that people who don't live in the town but live near it still claim it as theirs and are still very concerned about the direction that it's going. And they feel very much that they too should have a voice in what is happening in the town. Maybe they live in Rollinsville. Maybe they live up toward Ward, some of the other communities right around there. But they really identify strongly with Nederland and say and certainly indicate that they want the best for Nederland.
Are residents and people who live in the nearby communities feeling hopeful that the town can get back to a sense of normalcy?
Certainly that hope is there. As for the recall itself, because of the timing of when petitions were turned in, it is going to actually be held coincident with their next regularly scheduled election, which is April 7th. And actually, the way that it's going to be handled is the ballot language will not even ask, are we recalling these people? It's simply going to be, for example, with the mayor, Christopher Larson, if he chooses to run again, the question of his being reelected or not will appear on the ballot. Do you want to recall this person? That language will actually not be there, which is frustrating to the people who have pushed for this recall in the first place. I think there's going to be a lot more dust flying between now and April 7th when that recall vote is set to take place. There is still an active lawsuit right now in Boulder District Court, which seeks to move up the date of that recall vote and make it as a separate standing balloting as distinct from the April 7th town election. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it will be part of the April 7th town balloting, and we'll see what we see.
Charlie Brennan is a senior reporter with the Boulder Daily Camera. You can find links to his reporting at our website, kunc.org. Charlie, it was such an amazing story, and thanks so much for joining us.
Aaron, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Colorado Edition from KUNC. Rock climbing will make its debut in the Tokyo Summer Olympics next year, and the U.S. team is training right here in the Mountain West. For those climbers competing, the games represent a high point in their career, but not everyone is a fan of making it an Olympic sport. Nate Hedgie has more.
I've got to admit, I expected the Olympic Rock Climbing Training Center to be a multi-million dollar sports complex. White walls, bright lights. But instead, it's a cold, dark warehouse near downtown Salt Lake City.
The space is a little dingy.
That's assistant coach Meg Coyne.
But it's ours, and we love it, and it's been great for the training we're doing.
Coyne moved here a few months ago from Atlanta to get the climbing team into shape. They've got less than a year before the sport debuts in the Olympics.
It feels like an incredible race.
Coyne says her team lags behind other countries who have been building their Olympic teams for years. She says Japan especially is a powerhouse.
Oh, Japan is dominant.
Really?
It's Japan, Japan, more Japan, Japan.
So if the U.S. wants to beat Japan, they need to practice hard.
A whole lot of the just nitty-gritty training. It's like you spending skin on the wall.
Spending skin on the wall, what does that mean?
Spending skin means like you quite literally wipe off your skin when you're training a lot, like particularly your fingertips. So
that's really intense.
Only a handful of the eight climbers who are training in Salt Lake will make it to the Games. One of these Olympic hopefuls is 23-year-old Kyra Condi. She's at the training center climbing and singing along to one of her favorite workout songs. Condi says she loves climbing to fast-paced songs like this.
It makes you want to move. It's like, I don't know. I can't do slow music while climbing.
And that makes sense because Condi is like a hummingbird. She speaks fast and she moves fast. Her expertise is in a style called bouldering. It's like the CrossFit of climbing. The wall is only about 20 feet tall, and soft mats are used for safety instead of ropes and harnesses. Condi leaps onto the climbing wall and shows me. She moves like a cat, controlled and easy. Another style Condi's good at is speed climbing. For that one, the wall is higher and you have a harness and rope for safety. Athletes race each other up identical routes.
And it's about who gets to the top the fastest.
There's also lead climbing, and this is what you probably picture when you think of rock climbing. There are ropes and harnesses, and the routes are long and hard. Whoever gets highest up the wall wins. Normally, these styles are separated into different competitive sporting events. But next year's Olympics are combining all three into a single event. Condi says it's like competing in a triathlon. Right now, she's preparing for a qualifier in France.
So, like, you stressed out right now?
Definitely mega stressed out. But I've also been talking to a sports psych for the first time ever, and that's been really helpful, actually.
A sports psychologist is someone who helps an athlete reduce stress and focus on the task at hand.
Kind of like one of the things is like, you know, you don't want to be competing and thinking about like, oh my God, am I going to make the Olympics? Oh my God, is this going to happen?
Still, she can't help but think about Tokyo next year.
It's a really exciting prospect. I've always been a really big fan of the Olympics. And so like the idea of being there is crazy to me.
But climbing in the Olympics isn't for every climber. Free solo superstar Alex Honnold told one news outlet that he wouldn't even qualify for the Olympics because it tests a totally different skill set than his. He's best known for climbing 1,000-foot cliffsides, outside without rope. But this is indoor, competitive climbing, and not everyone likes it. Patagonia founder Yvonne Chouinard says this kind of climbing has stripped the sport of its essence as a purist outdoor endeavor.
With any sport, you know, this is a deterioration.
That's Chouinard on the hunting podcast Meat Eater. Before founding his outdoor apparel company, he was a climbing pioneer in the 20th century. He isn't a fan of what he refers to as sport climbing.
Well, sport climbing is indoor climbing. It's climbing where there's no risk involved.
Olympic hopeful Kyra Condi acknowledges this tension between climbing camps.
There's always been this kind of like trash talk within climbing.
But for her part,
I personally don't like it when people like, you know, hate on one aspect versus the other because we all love the same thing. Like we all love climbing.
And now Condi hopes to make history by becoming one of the first climbers to make it to the Olympics. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie.
The French qualifiers were held this past weekend, and Kyra Condi earned a spot on the Olympic team along with Nathaniel Coleman. They joined Brooke Rabutu from Boulder, who qualified in August.
And if you're not going to be part of that team but still want to be involved in sport climbing, why not join a fantasy league? We have Ari Schneider on the line with us now. He is the founder of Fantasy Sport Climbing, which is based out of Boulder. Ari, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so fascinated by this whole thing, but I want to start by asking you about sport climbing. For those unfamiliar with it, how does this work?
Climbing as a whole, as a sport, kind of includes the outdoor aspect and also the indoor aspect. The indoor aspect of climbing has been growing quite rapidly in the past 20 years, and recently competitive indoor rock climbing, it was just announced, will be included in the 2020 Olympic Games. So there's been a lot of growth on the competitive indoor side of the sport, which is generally referred to as sport climbing, and it includes three disciplines, which are the lead climbing, which is pretty regular climbing with a rope, bouldering, which is a discipline where you're climbing relatively low to the ground without a rope, protected by pads in case you fall. And the final discipline is speed climbing, which is a race to see who can get to the top of the wall fastest.
Are you a climber yourself?
Yeah, I'm a climber. I started climbing when I was 5 years old, and I really fell in love with it when I was in college. Yeah, I've been doing it for a while, and most of my climbing is outdoor, but I also coach a competitive indoor rock climbing team.
What's your favorite part about climbing?
I love the movement. It's odd because climbing is just like this filled with natural movements, but we don't really get to use those movements anywhere else.
Explain for us, how does the Fantasy League work?
At the start of the season, this upcoming season is going to start at the end of February. Sign up, and that'll get you started, and it'll give you credits with which you can build a team of your 10 favorite climbers. And as the season progresses, if your climbers, they perform well, and they make it in the top 10 in World Cup events, your scores will go up, and you'll perform better, and you'll earn credits in the game in order to build an even better team for the following competition.
What gave you the idea for the league?
It actually started many years ago. There was a brief period of time where Freeskier Magazine ran a fantasy sports league for competitive halfpipe and slopestyle skiing, which actually made its Olympic debut in 2014. As we saw with free skiing after its Olympic debut, it made tremendous rise in the public media. And already climbing is growing tremendously. And we think that after the Olympics, especially, the sport's going to become huge. And so we want to be at the forefront of that. And basically, the idea was to start a media startup that specialized in covering the international sport climbing circuit and provided a way for fans to get involved with the sport and be engaged with their favorite professional climbers.
So part of your goal is to then raise a bit of awareness for the sport.
Exactly. The competitive side of climbing is really big in Europe and Asia, and it's popular in the United States, but it still has quite a bit of growth left. I would say it's not in the mainstream eyes, but there's definitely potential for indoor sport climbing to grow in popularity, too. So many people this past year have been going to their local indoor rock climbing gym and are being introduced to the sport in that indoor setting where it's fairly welcoming and accessible.
For someone who's interested in participating but doesn't know any sport climbers, do you have any people, any recommendations for those you think are promising?
There's so many great climbers in the circuit. It's hard to pick just a few. My advice is just see who's competing in each event. The International Federation of Sport Climbing posts the start list before every event. And just pick people who sound interesting, whose names you've heard. The interesting thing about fantasy sports is a lot of people who participate in fantasy sports in sports like football, baseball, soccer, they didn't follow the sport very much before they started participating in fantasy sports, but they start paying attention a lot more once they're more engaged and involved in the fantasy aspect, because it's pretty fun and it's a good way to get involved with the sport with your friends.
Ari Schneider is the founder of Boulder-based Fantasy Sport Climbing. Ari, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks.
You can find more information about that fantasy league and all the stories from today's show at KUNC.org.
That's our show for today. Monday on Colorado Edition, we'll look ahead at the economic forecast for 2020 here in Colorado. I'm Henry Zimmerman.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. Our show is produced by Lily Tyson. Brian Larson is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by Colorado musicians Brianna Harris and Johnny Burroughs.
Thanks for listening. This is Colorado Edition from KUNC.